Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast, and you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Thank you very much, Rachel. Weather today, highs of 11 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade, so fairly standard there. Dry and breezy with variable amounts of cloud. And I do believe Lincoln's pretty much going to escape any kind of precipitation or rain until the evening at the worst. So interesting stuff there, great stuff. Okay, Natalie Tuck, as we mentioned, in so many years, you sort of worked through the whole process of doing the Wednesday and the Thursday. People said, what's going to happen? But you're in the ideal position to actually advise Jessica on the kind of system that she's also signed up to, because yeah, she does the Wednesdays, she does the Thursdays as well.
Oh, well done you, Jess. It's hard work, isn't it, getting up early in the morning?
Yeah, I have to admit. It's worth it though.
It sort of sets you up for the whole day. But as Natalie Tuck's housemate has just actually said, and I quote from indeed the Facebook page that some 7% of employers might be using to actually seek work, as we just heard on the news, Natalie laughs a lot. She laughs at anything, like a teapot falling off a chair. So what's the punchline with respect to that? You know, a teapot falling off a chair. Is it something that's just surreal in its own routine? Or why would the teapot be on the chair in the first place? What's the punchline?
A teapot never fell off a chair. She was using it as an example of something that I would laugh at.
Right.
Being hypothetical. Yeah. And a teapot were to fall off a chair, then she would expect
you would find
me
it most
laugh.
Amusing. You'd find it most amusing.
I would
amusing.
Do, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Is this the one that's from New Zealand?
It is, yeah.
Okay, right. Aww. Jessica, this is the
yes.
critical...
Yes.
I thought you had hiccups there for a moment, Natalie. I thought, where are we going to go on this particular one? So is this, I mean, teapots falling on off chairs in New Zealand? Is that kind of like the height of humour?
I've never heard of that myself.
were we to actually go to Auckland at this particular moment in time, or Christchurch, and say, "Oh look, there's a teapot. It's going to fall off the chair." Would we actually sort of get an instant?
Ooh.
You know, it's the teapot fell off the chair. maybe not. Tell us what you're doing, Natalie. Let's give a little bit of sanity to this program, because you're actually working for a very prestigious international organisation in which you're not only reading the news on web packages and websites, etc., but you're also making use of your journalism postgraduate qualifications as well as your undergraduate qualifications.
I'm a finance journalist actually. Mm-hmm. for pensions. So I cover the UK and the European pensions industry, and it's really fun. You wouldn't believe how fun the pensions industry is, honestly. So yeah, it's great. It's really I said to someone the other day, it's like being at university still, because it's like I've got this whole new subject to learn about pensions, and I write news, which is what I did at university because I did journalism, and yet I go to lots of seminars and lectures on pensions. So it's like going to lectures.
You see, it's a
grown-up version.
When you said, Natalie, it's so much fun and enjoyability, of course, that was prefaced by the laughing at a teapot falling off a chair. So, I mean, there could be a sort of notion where the credibility has been sort of somewhat put into question. Nevertheless, as long as we can honestly say...
Natalie Tuck, she's a dancer, a Meryl Streep aficionado, entertainment correspondent, and from Yorkshire. What's not to love?
That's what you should actually launch the seminar with, basically. Just to actually enter the room from that perspective. Emma Tinson has joined us. Good morning, Emma.
Hello, good
Are
morning.
Are you okay?
I'm okay.
That's all right.
I overslept slightly. But I'm here now.
Okay. Exactly. So there we are, you see, Natalie. Both of them have managed to do the Wednesday and the Thursday.
Well done, girl. Salute you. I know it's not easy, you see. I did it, you know, myself.
Yeah, and still do, of course, but obviously not live in the studio. You know, that's a different line for that perspective. So, I mean, it's fair to say, Emma, would you consider life as a financial journalist, working for business-to-business publications
journalist.
And dealing with pensions and so on?
See, I'm not good with numbers, which is why I became a journalist. So, probably not for me. Hmm. But it's something that, you know, I'd be really interested in. I like reading, like, the Financial Times, so I look intelligent. I'm not very good with numbers, to be honest.
Striking the pose. And Jessica, obviously you're looking to be a war correspondent, I believe.
Yes, I am.
Oh,
I
wow.
have been offered work experience at Zurich though.
Oh, Zurich,
so
yeah.
There is a possibility, maybe getting involved with that sort of
you
thing.
You know, I was out for dinner last night. That's so important. So I was out for dinner last night with a lady who's the PR at Standard Life, but she used to be the PR for the MOD, the Army in Scotland, and she was telling us about her stories in Afghanistan. And it was just fascinating. So really, honestly, I think that if you can get yourself as a war correspondent, yes, it's dangerous, but the experiences that you'll have, and she was telling me about how Sundays were called cake Sundays because all of, you know, British people, old ladies at home, they send cakes to Afghanistan for their for the soldiers. And so every Sunday it used to be cake Sunday, and they would just like look forward to it and stuff their like faces with cakes. So it's really interesting. Like, and if you can do it, I think it would be a fantastic opportunity.
Definitely.
Sweet cake.
Oh, I love a bit of cake.
Makes perfect sense. I've just actually shared a photograph from our Los Angeles correspondent, Phil Learness, of course, who, needless to say, would send his best wishes to you, Natalie. Great that's there for her, Phil Learness in
Hi,
LA.
Phil.
Now, and on that sort of routine, we'll just sort of turn the screen round here, or you can always sort of like it. What's comfortable for Fuzz Aldrin might not be comfortable for her person, which is an interesting line there. I don't quite know what Fuzz is actually doing with Phil's leg there, or whether it's some kind of surreal sort of yoga-like pose, but I figured, you know, that has got to actually trump the teapot falling off the chair in terms of at least mild humour. In case you missed this particular line, Emma, Natalie's flatmate, who's from New Zealand, claims that Natalie would find a teapot falling off a chair quite amusing.
What?
So what's the best way that Natalie can actually cope with a New Zealand flatmate then, Jessica? What's the sort of thing that, you know, I mean, obviously generalising in huge areas here, you might well have been at the Isle of Man for a few years, so you might, but what's the key thing she should be aware of?
We're constantly hungry. Give us food and we'll be happy. Bit of humour, Fly of the Conchords, have you been introduced to the Fly of the Conchords?
No, I haven't yet.
I'd check them out. Their humour is a bit awkward, but once you get into it, it's very good. Probably watch that with them. Lord of the Rings, watch that with them. That'll be great. Yeah.
They can point out all the destinations, all the locations.
Yeah, that's a useful tip there, Natalie, to actually assist you on your way into all sorts of places. And you may actually sort of be interested in that following your good self as our cover girl on our Southside Broadcasting Facebook page, our sister Jessica is actually there. Sorry, Emma is there. Jessica hasn't arrived as yet. She will before too long. we have on the sort of current lineup Emma, Holly Parker, Ed Wellman, and Annette Andre, who we might be meeting up with again in a week's time. All very exciting.
Oh, lovely.
There you go. Emma, any questions you want to put to Natalie about how did she survive the University of Lincoln journalism degree and then sort of progress to do postgraduate work or all sorts of other aspects?
Well, Natalie, how did you find it going from university into employment? Was it quite difficult or were you more excited about it?
Well, I think I put it off for as long as possible. I went and did a postgraduate. And then I went and studied in France, and then I went travelling. But actually, when you transition from undergraduate to postgraduate, it becomes like employment in postgraduate, you're just like up every day at 7:30 or something into uni. And I think that I don't mind working. I don't find it hard to get up. I think the days are long. And, you know, you get really tired.
You'll find there's still the 24-hour duration that we normally find
as
the Earth rotates.
Yes, Alex. But when you're a student, you know, at 3 p.m. you can be like, oh, I want to go home. So you you can't do that at work. Just stay and get some news. But it's really fun. I would say that it's so much fun. And I never realised how much fun it would be. And I think journalism is one of those careers where it's a fun career, and you get a lot of perks and fun experiences. So I'm going to the House of Lords next Wednesday night.
Ooh, exciting!
Through my job, so it's really fun.
Before too long, you'll be hanging out with the likes of Richard Fitzwilliams as well, which is marvellous.
Yeah.
I see, Emma, you actually liked the photograph we took yesterday. It's very good.
It's
marvellous.
I'm social media savvy.
It's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, brilliant stuff on that sort of things, and a little range of other sort of factors that are coming through as well. Okay, moving on. Natalie, finally, before we actually go into the classic... It's a beauty. So, would you like to share some words of advice for the new midweek drivettes routine? Because, I mean, they've been with us now for a few weeks. They're sort of bedding down. Neither of them have been on their location reporters yet. There's a variety of reasons why. It's supposedly referring around Ed Wellman, but never mind. But what sort of things would you actually sort of counsel both Emma and Jessica to actually do as far as midweek drivettes are concerned? As of course, team midweek drivette leader.
Oh, gosh, I would say, girls, you know, when you go out on a location report, if you see anything that you like, you can add it to a shopping list and Alex will buy it for you at a later
date. Whoa. I mean, you know, I've told you that the Lamborghini and the Sunseeker yacht will have to wait,
and
you know?
The whole house.
I'm still waiting for my Sunseeker, Alex. Yeah.
Well,
you know,
we'll probably do the London Boat Show in January again, so we'll connect with that in any case. Anyway, moving on. This is the crunch one. Emma, would you like to bowl those last two questions to Natalie Tuck, please?
Of course. Natalie, have you had a reasonable telephonic link with us today?
It's been fantastic as always.
And will you be joining us anytime soon?
Yes, hopefully. Alex, will I?
Yeah, I think, you know, you are a regular sort of... You know, I mean, it's a perfect way to actually set off to the commute, isn't it, basically? I mean, is it from here to the local underground station or tube, as you Londoners refer to it?
Yes, the tube. I'm dreading it. Yesterday, there were severe delays on the tube.
You have to plan ahead.
Oh, my word. Honestly, you cockney people. Richard Fitzwilliams is calling on his mobile because his other landline isn't functioning. Never mind. Here's Brian Wilson. Awesome. Children in need. Actually, did you ask the last question there? Did you? Of course you did. Yeah. Sorry, Natalie. I'm getting very confused. I may not always love you, but as long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without. God only knows, God only knows what I'd be without you. God only knows what I'd be without you. Extraordinary. Actually, the photograph of William Sitwell doing his radio show earlier on Tuesday. That is what you call getting down with the kids, that is.
Definitely.
No doubt. Yes, and we'll speak to William at 9:20 this morning. So things to look forward to there, Jessica. Meanwhile, on his mobile, because he's got slight challenges with respect to other sorts of communication, I did suggest carrier pigeon. No, he wasn't having any of that. We've got Richard Fitzwilliams. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning. I'm in the imitation game with Alan Turing. I'm in need of solved any problem in a fleeting scintilla of a second.
Exactly.
I think.
A fleeting scintilla of a second would have been all sorted through, but never mind. You're with us now. Shall we talk poppies? Because obviously we are 2 days after the 11th hour of the 11th month and the whole Remembrance Day parade at the Cenotaph and so on, and it seemed to go off splendidly, as we would expect. And of course, the poppies are being dismantled now. It would seem poppies are being dismantled. Yeah, by one, they're gradually sort of going. So, despite David Cameron saying it's all right, they'll be up to the end of the month. No, obviously not in full force. They won't. Anyway,
The idea of dismantling them. It's important to make the point that of these amazing, and I mean it really is an absolutely brilliant art installation, the most popular ever with the British public, no question of that, because over 5 billion people, as you know, have now visited it. They're going to be poppies at the Tower of London until the end of the month, and then two sections of the poppies, the so-called weeping wall and then the wave, because some of the poppies live different heights. These would be touring parts of the country, and subsequent to that, part of this installation will be placed in the Imperial War Museum. I mean, it really has what I can only describe in Yeats's words as a terrible beauty.
Indeed. And I have to say, I don't normally sort of give praise to Rupert Murdoch organisations, but I thought the Times wraparound cover on Tuesday, or was it Monday? Anyway, it was very impressive. It's very good.
It was beautiful. It's something extraordinary. Interesting, of course, that they started planting poppies on the 17th of July, and yet it was, I think, the Queen's visit. That's when the Tower believes that the publicity surrounding it just started to take off, and then it tapped into the British psyche, and with each poppy representing a life actually lost by Britain and the colonies in that terrifying conflict. It really is. It was very, very moving. I went to the Imperial War Museum to see the new First World War galleries. That shows you the scale of the conflict, and does so very powerfully, I have to say. But there's no doubt you needed something new, something much as we honour the fallen at the Cenotaph, which is always very touching and moving. The numbers of people who could attend, of course, are limited, and it's on one particular occasion here, spread out over a period of time. I mean, it was possible for these huge crowds, and awesomely silent too.
Indeed. And I was just thinking there, obviously, Anzac and the other sort of troops, something that echoes New Zealand as well from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Has to say, hats off to Jessica for refraining, both in seminars on Monday and indeed Wednesday's midweek drive yesterday, of course, and today, from gloating over New Zealand's result in the rugby.
So proud.
She kept that back very quietly. You know, I thought she'd be coming in with all sorts of, you know, union, league, etc. But no, she hasn't. Clearly, she sort of appreciates.
Very modest.
Well, let's see. It's got style, class, really. Much like Elstree Studios used to have in all sorts of ways. 100 years of Elstree Studios. It seems like only yesterday, Richard, we were there shooting some stuff.
Well, I can only say that, of course, there are, as you know, a series of studios at Elstree. And from the Dam Busters to Big Brother, and from Star Wars
to EastEnders. Exactly.
EastEnders to the private life of Henry VIII, who wants to be a millionaire, to the King's Speech. I mean, it's quite extraordinary, and it is absolutely fascinating to read the mix of movies from Hitchcock's Blackmail onward for the talkies, and also originally silent movies, and the ups and downs of the studios, and the way so many well-known television productions being made there. I mean, it part and parcel of the British cinematic experience, that expertise that they were able to give the original Star Wars movies. I mean, that was absolutely pivotal, because George Lucas, Star Wars, and we know what has happened subsequently. And I mean, this is indeed the stuff of legend. But also, so many good British films have been made there. Very, very interesting. And just to see this list, whether you're looking at Ice Cold in Alex and Lolita, or indeed part of the collection of studios, had the castle built in 1952 for Ivanhoe, which apparently dominated the skyline for some years. That was particularly spectacular, a movie with Elizabeth Taylor in the beginning of the 1950s. And of course, Indiana Jones, we mustn't forget, one could go on and on. EastEnders, indeed.
We could go on, but we don't have the time to do that. And just indeed a little caveat for Emma, if you think Ice Cold in Alex, what's his temperature got to do with anything? It was very hot, and it starred Sylvia Sims and John Mills, and it was a war movie. Okay, yeah, it's just really wondering what's happening there. Anyway, the key sort of movie which I managed to catch last week, because I intended to do it, and it's currently sort of beaten Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain America: Winter Soldier into second and third place, respectively, for me, it has to be Interstellar. Outstanding.
See, I missed out on seeing this yesterday because I was on the show and my boyfriend and some of my other friends went to go see it without me.
Well,
I know.
Ex-boyfriend, then.
But yeah, so I was a bit let down, but they said it was absolutely amazing. It's, I think it's about 2 hours and
three,
nearly three hours. So it's a long film, but they said that it was definitely worth every minute of it.
There you have it.
It's fantastic.
Certainly understand that. But that, of course, was last week. This week, he's moving on to your next... well, actually, no, he's actually sort of just decided to get married. Benedict Cumberbatch, who obviously would have been your next boyfriend, but there we are. talking fame, fortune and the enigma who inspired him in this week's edition of the Radio Times, but I suspect you want to talk about The Imitation Game, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Indeed, and it's Benedict Cumberbatch's performance that is so extraordinary. There is a sense in which Alan Turing himself, a hero, if ever there was one, who shortened the war, it is estimated, by as much as 2 years by cracking the German Enigma code at Bletchley Park.
And thank heavens for that, because we would have had no room for the poppies if he hadn't.
Exactly.
Oh, no question, no question that we owe him a deep debt of gratitude. And this movie divided in flashback, as much as the flashback, into flashes back to his childhood and the friendship, particularly important friendship at Sherborne School, the horror of what happened in the early 50s when he was convicted of what was then called gross indecency, and he had to undergo chemical castration, and we subsequently know that he committed suicide. And this was a war hero. It's a movie that packs a punch because of the importance of the story, but also Cumberbatch's amazing performance. He's a genius who's tormented in some ways, deeply eccentric in others. There's an angst. There's also this completely unique personality that he has. He inhabits this role, and as an enigmatic character himself, he's all the more fascinating. But also the story, or parts of the story, parts are triumphal, parts are tragic. Also, to see how he manages to crack Enigma, although we know the result of it, it's to the film's credit that there is this aspect of a thriller about it, because if Enigma can be cracked, obviously the Allies have an enormous advantage in the war, and the crusty head of Bletchley Park is played by Charles Dance, no friend of Alan Turing, and there are some good performances and fellow co-makers such as Matthew Good, and there's Keira Knightley giving a very passable turn as Joan Clark, who was briefly Turing's fiancée, but he felt he couldn't go through with it. It's a movie that parts have, or are rather, contrived. Knightley occasionally has a slip or two with her axe, but these are minor quibbles.
No, we know you have an ambivalent attitude to Ms. Knightley, so just steady on. Remember Domino, one of the outstanding movies of our time. And just to actually...
Exactly. I'm glad you remember it. I mean...
What's not to forget?
I must give credit to director Morton Pildrum and scriptwriter Graham Moore for The Imitation Game, because it's a fine movie about a brilliant feat. And there are no spoilers, but it's very interesting how he manages to get the clues, building his own machine, but there are obvious problems that lead to the cracking of Enigma.
It's not a history lesson, it's a warning, as Benedict Cumberbatch says in his interview in the Radio Times, which also...
He said it could happen again in that interview, and he is very, very angry, as well any human being might be, about the fearsome treatment.
But he did receive a pardon 60 years after his death, so let's be honest, you know, all worked out well in the end. He just had to wait 60 years and after he died. That's a key thing.
That's the only problem, and indeed it is a movie that should cause anyone to reflect the ruthlessly homophobic post-war Britain.
Unfortunately, Richard, as indeed Emma will discover when we encounter the joys, and indeed already has, of the Origins of Modern Britain module, it wasn't just necessarily people's personal lifestyle choices which also caused problems. Even skin colour had issues as well. Did it not, Emma?
Indeed.
So let's move on to something which you don't have any issues with at all, because at the end of the day, most of our skeletons are the same colour, the skeleton twins. You see what we did
there?
Yes,
I'm here.
Nice links. Very good.
Yes, I have to say that is one of the treats of the year. This, directed by Craig Johnson, who co-writes, it's a wonderfully moving and very funny movie, which I want to be very careful about giving spoilers here, although it is quite clear pretty early in the film where this is probably going to lead. But we have initially the estranged twins, Maggie, played by Kirsten Wiig, and Milo, a wonderful performance by Bill Hader. Well, Milo attempts to commit suicide by slashing his wrists. She is about to take large numbers of pills, doing likewise when she gets the news about him. And she suggests that he comes to stay with her and her husband, Lance, played by Luke Wilson, in New York. And it's the chemistry between Kirsten Wiig and Bill Hader which really makes this movie a treat, because it's sensitive, it's well observed, it's funny. There are plenty of flashbacks that develops its plot. There's a priceless cameo by Joanna Gleason as a monstrously hippie and vacuous mother. And there are some absolutely charmingly written episodes. And there's also a darker side as this movie develops. It's got a wonderful script. It's one of these indies which really swept me up, I have to say. Excellent performances from everybody, including Luke Wilson as Maggie's husband, who could easily have been portrayed just as a useless nerd and, in fact, is given a personality all of his own. But the focus is on the twins. Bill Hader's Milo is superlative, and one wonders whether awards seasons do tend to overlook indies. It's such a pity. But this is a very, very likeable, interesting, touching, funny, but a film with an edge to it, which I played down in this review, but you will discover.
Let's not forget Steve Weir as the Headless Horseman, or indeed the interestingly named Sir Lucius Twentius Aitken as the uncredited librarian. Anyway, I suppose every career has to start somewhere, and that could be his start.
Well, careers, I mean, this is one of the problems. Maggie's a dental hygienist, which isn't the most demanding of
steady. Job. We don't want the dental hygienist suddenly getting on the case. You know, doing proper dental hygiene is critical, and particularly you're very dodgy ground with respect to what's happening in Nottingham recently, so just be careful.
Sorry. Well, in that case, I also have to say that Milo is a failing actor.
There we are, yes, but that... He's in between jobs or he's resting. The Skeleton Twins and The Imitation Game. Which one of those floats your boat, Jessica Ward?
I don't know. Both sound really interesting. Yeah. I'll probably watch them both.
But not at the same time.
No, obviously not. Obviously not. That'd be very good multitasking.
It'd be nice. It's fusion, wouldn't it?
I wish I could do that.
The Imitation Twins or The Skeleton Skeleton Game. And what about yourself, Emma?
I definitely want to watch The Imitation Game. That sounds really interesting.
According to The Independent, the best British film of the year.
Wow. Oh.
It is a very, very good film indeed. There's absolutely no doubt about it, because it's Cumberbatch's performance. Expect plenty of talk as we move towards the film season about that.
BAFTAs,
no doubt about it.
Inevitable, really. Still,
he's always talked about when it comes to awards season, isn't he?
Except
it's not just the awards, of course. I mean, what about the? I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say on air, but the Cumber it begins with B and ends with S. But the fact that he has admirers in all spheres. I've met him, and he's very cerebral, a delightful person.
Well, his mother was Van de Ventum, of course. So what's not to appreciate in your mother's Wanda Ventum? She, of course, never equaled her fantastic role in Gerry Anderson's UFO as Virginia Lake, of course, the Colonel. And never mind, life continues. Jessica, I think it's time to actually ask those last two questions to Richard Fitzwilliams.
Okay, have you enjoyed this, the midweek morning edition?
It kind of makes sense if you add those words and put them in some sort of order, Richard.
It's early morning.
It's coherent.
Have you enjoyed your
time? I certainly have, because we've been talking, after all, about a very, very amazing Paul Cummings' amazing art installation, but also two movies that are absolutely marvellous.
Or three, if you include last week's Interstellar, which, of course, we never plugged to. There we are.
Well, we discussed it, and I was, as you will remember, very favourably disposed towards it. So I have had problems with Christopher Nolan, but it is an amazing feat.
And will you be joining us in the near future?
Well, I most sincerely hope so.
In fact, actually, we normally try to get down to London to do a kind of pre-Christmas piece with you, good self. We must see if we can sort something out from that basis. I don't know. Time's...
Yes, wouldn't that be? That would be delightful, yes.
Scooting through in so many ways. By the way, Natalie Tuck sends her best. She's up at the House of Lords next week. Mm-hmm. All part of our journalistic routine. Just goes to show. Life continues. Richard Fitzwilliams will be back with us next week. This is Siren 107.3 FM Midweek Drive Morning Edition. It's 8:33. When you sort of go into not exactly predictive text, but you actually type in something which is supposed to be facebook, and you get bppk. Oh my. It's probably all down to computers. Ian Lennox, you don't have any problems with computers, do you?
Oh, never.
Never. Exactly.
Because
they work so sensationally. Speaking of technology going peculiar, I'm not sure whether John Wenham will have sorted this out as yet. He probably will have just thrown out the window. But I was in the office today, which John works in every so often as well, and it's the siren most. This is a bit of a little bit of an insight, Ian, into the behind the scenes. You know, the fans like it, so I'm told. But in terms of that whole sequence, there is a mobile phone that's sort of set to go off into an alarm mode. And I sort of thought, well, I want to sort of switch it off, but it makes some bizarre noise there. I blame Andrew David. He's sort of deliberately left this alarm to go. John may well be sort of at the end of his tether at this particular stage. He's making all sorts of strange noises. I had to just leave and vacate the studio, and vacate the office, but still, life continues. Ian, what are you doing these days, and would you like to find out which one of our top team of dynamic co-presenters, Jessica or Emma, has actually had their mother, in fact, as opposed to mum, or both, same thing, actually purchase a copy of your book?
Good Lord.
who do you think he might be? Is it...
I don't know, but could you ask her to sign me an autograph?
That's an interesting one. I told you, I'm going to make you a best-selling campaign author. One book at a time, working through this. Would you like to hazard a guess? Is it Jessica or is it Emma? Who would you
Emma.
Ah.
No.
Sorry, Jessica.
So let's just to sort of set this sequence, because obviously it's critical from the point of view of podcasts and various other factors. Jessica, your version of Gentlemen and Players is still sort of sitting...
It's with. Yes. I was actually going to read some last night, but then I got distracted. I started watching... Phil Lennis's documentary last night.
The truth is out there.
Yes, I did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you all sorted through. Oh, so
I'm really sorry.
You're favouring guests.
I know,
on the show.
I didn't mean to. it just happened.
Yeah. but you see, Phil has a cat called Fuzz Aldrin. You know.
Amazing.
But on the other hand, Ian has a singing plumber. So, you know, it's different. You know, it's a different line of that. But we believe it's your mum who's actually got a copy. But now, you couldn't quite remember the title of the Ian Lennis book.
No, I can't. I think the cover was. Like quite black, I can't remember.
Oh, 60s man.
Oh, okay, it must be then.
Yeah.
Yes.
My first one.
She says it's a bit of a complicated read, but she says it's really, really good. She enjoys it, and she says that you write very beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
Very beautifully.
So get the parents on the side, Ian, and the whole job's a double. You know? That's what J.K. Rowling sort of built her career on. So, you know, it's important that sort of sorted through on that basis. So life continues on that basis. What is filling the world of Ian Lennox this time around? Because when last we spoke, of course, you were just beginning to redraft the manuscript that you'd rediscovered in every
sense. Yes, I have. I've gotten toward... What I'm doing at the moment is I'm putting it... From one, it was done in separate chapters, so I'm trying to put them all into one file, which, with my lack of expertise, takes quite a bit of time. I'm also changing the typeface, And I've also started to revise it, started to read some bits and to make some amendments. But I'm thinking, I don't think I'm going to do that anymore. I think what I'm going to do is go right through it again. Because it's 30 years or 25 years since I've read it. And then allow a little bit of gestation time. And then start doing the amendments then, because I'll have a better idea of where I'm going. Because at the moment, if I start changing something, I might, 30 pages on, it might not work
out. The tapestry could be unplugged, you could be working with genius.
Yes, all the wool would come out, yes.
We've had an update from Phil Lerners, who'd actually just like to share with us the latest text for
Fuzz
Under
and Sunshine.
Emma, you can deliver this, because it is...
Oh, wow. Well, Phil has posted a lovely picture here of a book... called Downton Tabby.
Exactly.
Downton Tabby.
Downton Tabby.
Oh, it's a cat, is it?
Yeah, the cast of Downton Abbey as cats.
Oh,
it's actually amazing.
That's doubtless why William Sitwell, who's joined us at 9:20, has actually just said that he's doing the Today Show at BBC Radio 4. It's another station. Don't worry about it, Jessica. That's at 8:50. It's nice to have BBC Radio 4 as a warm-up act. That's what we like to say. So, good stuff there. The key thing there, and I think the message we must take, Ian, from that is if you want your next text to be a super success, put in some cats.
Yeah.
Preferably cute ones.
You could do cats doing sports.
Cats,
yeah.
Cats
great
doing
idea.
Sports.
Great.
I hope you're writing these lines down, Ian, because
this is this is a moneymaker here.
Yep.
What have you had for breakfast?
Emma is down with the kids when it comes to cats doing sports. and don't get me started on Jessica's netball expertise, because it is a genuine sort of a whole world there. I think it's time we actually introduced Ian to yesterday's Cameron Tilbury musical selection, because I think we were all very impressed with it. That might mean that Ian sort of says it's thumbs up. Or thumbs down. We were a little bit worried about the grammar, because it's called refrigerator as opposed to refrigerator. But apparently it's because she's American. It's Hannah Bethel, Ian. So Hannah Bethel, young lady who's doing startlingly well. And Cameron was very much was eulogising about her, really.
Yeah,
was
really?
Almost as impressive as Jessica and Emma combined, in my search. Exactly, keyword, almost. but this is Hannah Bethel, refrigerator, for your delectation and delight, Cameron Tilbury's official musical choice for the second week in November 2014.
Didn't even hear you coming, your supper on the camera.